Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Right, well, thank you very much indeed. And I was reminded when you nearly put me on second of a colleague who was sitting at the front of assembly, you know, in school with the whole leadership team sitting there, and the head said, good morning, everybody. I'm going to hand over to Mr. Griffiths, who's taking assembly today. And Mr. Griffiths had this look of surprise on his face. He had no idea he was doing. And then he walked to the edge of the stage, gave a very good assembly, actually. But it just did remind me a bit of that. OK, where do we start? I mean, actually, I was just thinking, as I was just reflecting on some of those dates and those timescales and all those things, I should have put a subtitle onto here, which really said something like, you couldn't invent this. It really is a frightening timescale. And I just want to really, I mean, if you've heard me before at this conference or other ones in the last year, I'll apologise for saying some of the things again and using some of the same slides, actually, with very little change. And the reason for that is because there are things that have not changed very much since last time I was speaking, so I'm going to reflect on that context a little bit. But I want to reflect on the wider context just before we start into delving into the IAG side of things. And just think about the context in which school and college leaders are at the moment. And here's my first of two pictures, which really sums up to me the policy environment that people are in at the moment, not only on IAG, but on absolutely everything. If you talk to the 17,000 school and college leaders who I represent around the country, they feel that there is an absolute torrent of change. Absolutely everything is being washed away, all the things that have been in place, and there is much detail that is missing on what needs to replace it. So whether or not they think it's a good thing to change those things, there are real issues about this. And, you know, that phrase I think that Deirdre used, the shifting paradigm, I think is so important about what's going on here. And the other context, and I don't want to dwell on this greatly, but if you're a school leader, particularly at the moment, they are feeling incredibly got at. And we've got our annual conference next week, and we'll be saying a lot about this. This is the chief inspector with one of his many statements. I could have had a picture of the prime minister or ministers at the moment criticising schools. And just in case you're not very good at maths, did you know that 2 out of 7 pupils are below average in literacy at the moment? Okay, that's today's announcement. That's where we are at the moment. And it is desperately disconcerting and demoralising for people to actually be working in that context. So I want to be positive because we want to think about IAG as something where, but you've got to understand that when you're talking to people who are at the front end of this, that they're working in that context. And so to try and be positive about a new development that's really important is difficult when you've got that being thrown at you all of the time. Now, I've used this one before, and apologies if you've seen it before, but I still think it's absolutely applicable. There has never been a greater need for high-quality IAG in our schools and colleges at the moment. We've got those frightening statistics about unemployment. We've got a greater need than ever to raise aspirations and inject hope. The danger is that those football stadiums full of people who Deirdre's talked about, you know, give up hope. They don't have aspirations, and they don't know where to go. They don't know where to look in order to find out how to do something about it. And for that, in order to do that, they need information. They need clarity. They need financial advice. They need feedback from employers who are saying loud and clear what they want. And they need the skills to make them employable at the end of that process. And so, you know, we welcome with open arms the social mobility strategy and the high profile the government has given to that. But it's got to be made into a reality. And we have a responsibility as school and college leaders, and everybody in this room, I'm sure, shares that responsibility to do everything we can. But my goodness, we need some help about this. So where are we in terms of the actual timescale that we've got at the moment? I was just looking at my calendar while Verity was just speaking there, and I was thinking, right, 5th of April, 2.5 weeks away, and has anybody noticed that it's the day before Good Friday? That most schools will be closed, most colleges will be closed, most professionals will not be available for that launch. I hope somebody's going to think about that very hard, because communication is something that is just so desperately important, and it strikes me that doing it in the middle of the Easter holidays might be a little bit of a problem. I shall certainly take that back to afterwards. I think it needs to be discussed. I'm sure it can't be moved. Ministers need to understand that they are at the moment really not succeeding in communicating to the profession about this. Now, we have this new legislation, and we have this responsibility, and the statutory guidance. Let me just spend a couple of minutes on the statutory guidance, if I may. Can I just say that I and many other people have been emailing and phoning and asking at the DfE weekly, often daily, about this statutory guidance. I saw a draft of it months and months ago at the careers, the advisory forum for this, and it's just stuck in the system. And the point is that as schools who are having this new requirement starting in 2 weeks' time, in September, but for the new budget coming in 2 weeks' time, they have to make some decisions. And statutory guidance isn't everything, and we're not great, you know, believers in pages and pages of statutory guidance, but we need something set out that tells schools what's going on. And in the context of the prohibition of marketing, as it were, that is really, really important that this comes out. So certainly I'm going to be continuing to call on the department to get that guidance out, because they really do need something. We have been trying very hard as an association to tell our members as much as we possibly can about what needs to be done. But when you've got so much uncertainty and so much that isn't in place, this really is an issue. Now, schools have got to choose what they want to do, and they've got to pay for it from their budgets. And those are obviously extremely difficult decisions. I don't need to tell you about the constraints on budgets at the moment and the difficulties that they're facing. And the all-age service, which has now become the National Careers Service, as has been described, has a major focus on adults, not only in terms of the resources that are going into it, but also in terms of, the finance that's going into it, but also in terms of the services it's providing. And certainly, my experience, and perhaps I can speak quite frankly about this in my role, you know, my experience is that the DfE is not interested in a national service. Their interest, they really believe that it should be down to schools to decide. And we don't have a problem about the devolution of responsibility to schools, but what you need to do is make sure that people have the tools and the knowledge and the wherewithal to do the job. And that's desperately important. I know there are people from colleges here as well as schools, and I'm very aware I'm saying the word schools a lot. But it's desperately important for those people in colleges. We have lots of members in colleges as well. It's desperately important for those people who are in the FE sector that you're getting the feed-in of people who have got proper information and guidance to make sure they do go into the right routes and so on. And it's of equal importance to the schools to make sure they're providing the right guidance to pupils and not putting them onto routes which they will then not complete and then fall foul. We all fall foul of the success rates, but most importantly, those children fall foul of their life chances by having those things. So there is a desperate amount to do. Now, this strong market of providers, and that's the language that's been used in the government documentation, there's no doubt that it's been stimulated. But if you're sitting in a school, then the question you're asking at the moment is this a high-quality service? All this stuff that's coming into school, is it going to be what I need? There is a vast amount on the internet, some of it very good indeed. There are a vast amount number of providers who are offering services to schools. Some of them are offering them at absolutely outrageous prices. Others are offering good value for money services which are well worth having. The question is, where do I go if I'm a head teacher or a careers coordinator in a school? Where do I go in order to make sure that I get the right things? And where do I go when the funding that I've got is very, very limited indeed? In fact, there is no funding for this, other than, you know, and so it will be one of the many demands on the pupil premium or on other parts of a reducing budget. And so that is a major challenge that people are going to be facing. So in terms of the current issues for schools and colleges, information, statutory guidance, identifying the providers, procuring them, ensuring impartiality in all schools and quality assurance. And one of the things I'm really worried about is the development of a postcode lottery, because I see a real risk here. I see some excellent practice. Some of our members have been telling me about really good ideas they're putting in place to address this, and they're doing it because they've got the contacts in the area, or they've got ex-connections people who they feel can do something or whatever in the area, and they're putting together a structure that will really work. There are other people who are saying, there's no one here, there's nothing here, I don't know where to look, I don't know where to start. And the options that they're looking at the moment tend to be on this sort of spectrum. These are the sorts of things that schools are looking at. Employ your own professionally qualified careers advisor. Okay, if you've got one who you can find, but big questions about training, and that's where the infrastructure that previous speakers have talked about is so important, because with that LMI data and all those things that they need to know about, information about apprenticeships and different sources of what there is, those people need to be absolutely up to date. And I personally believe that the best way to do that is for them to be part of a service that is coordinated so that all careers advisors, wherever they are, can have access to that information. And I think that the government is being rather naive in assuming that it will happen just by some sort of by the market or whatever. I think that's a real problem. Another model that people are using is to support existing members of staff in training to become qualified. Now, that may or may not work. And in some cases, they have people who have aspirations in that direction. And provided they get the right training, then that will provide a feed into the careers profession, and they will be okay. They'll be able to do that. The third option is much more worrying, using existing staff without qualifications. And I'm afraid that's a pragmatic solution that I understand why people are going for that, but they're saying, oh, well, I've got a teaching assistant, higher level teaching assistant, who's good at, counselling pupils, has a good relationship with pupils, so we'll let them do the careers advice bit. But they're not qualified, they're not professionals, they're not able to deliver that sort of high quality service, and I'm not convinced either that there is a real risk with many of these categories here that they will be genuinely impartial. And as an ex-head of two schools, I know how important it is for that careers advisor to be impartial. I had no interest as a head in keeping people in school who were not suited to the courses that we were offering, or sending them to college to do the wrong courses that they weren't suited for. They need impartial advice. And then the next one is to outsource it. So that comes back to the point of how do they know what to outsource it to, where to go to, what to go for. And then making use of external sources of information. Now, there are lots of them out of there. And Speakers for Schools and Inspiring the Future from the Education Employer Task Force are wonderful resources. And I've been, I'll declare a bit of an interest. I'm on their partnership board. I think it's absolutely wonderful. And to give you an example, I went to the most inspiring session a couple of weeks ago, where Bill Gates came into an ordinary inner city school, not very far from here quite recently, and absolutely inspired the young people. That's the sort of thing that is really good. TES, Growing Ambitions, lots of other things. Number 10 are supposed to be producing a website called I Am, which is going to have lots of things on it. No idea what it's going to look like. It's changed its name again, has it? All right.
Lost the plot on what?
I've completely lost the plot. I lost the plot about 3 months ago. And why? If we're not having a central service, then let's... Anyway, I won't go there. But, there are... There are lots of things, right? 2 minutes, I must rush. Okay, so there are lots of things there that are out there, but we need to make sure that we know what they are. And then the final option, which is probably a very powerful one, is sharing provision in an academy chain or a federation with other schools or colleges. And I think that's something really worth exploring and important to explore, because that probably is the most powerful way in which we can do things. Now, in the last year, we did a survey about what people were saying about access to impartial careers guidance. And I know ICG have recently done a similar survey as well. And I just want to highlight there that at that time, when we asked them. The fifth column there is 33% of them had not begun planning for it, and that was about at the turn of the year. Now, I think, you know, people have begun. More people, I think, are, in my feedback, is that more people have begun planning for it. But the number who are extremely concerned about that, which we think was... it was 20% who hadn't begun planning for it. Looking at the wrong column, 29% are extremely concerned about their capacity to reach this requirement. And I think that number is certainly at least as high as it was. It really is a worry that that there is still this lack of concern. So I think we have to take on the responsibility here. We have these challenges, which are... about getting face-to-face guidance. These young people who are the ones who are at risk of unemployment cannot just be simply told to phone up a number or go and look on a website. They need to sit down with somebody and be helped to find their way through what is a very complex set of information. We need information about apprenticeships. It's a real problem. People all over the country are telling me they find it so difficult to get that information out about what apprenticeships are available, both in the locality and in the wider area. And we know that too much of that is depending on personal contacts. That's not a way of improving social mobility. So there are many, many challenges facing schools at the moment, and there's a great deal of information that needs to go out. I absolutely support what Verity is saying about marketing, because we have to absolutely get these messages out so that people know what to do, and it really is urgent. Finally, I won't go over these key issues again, because I've covered them in the course of my presentation, but AOC and ASCL are producing some guidance at the moment to schools and colleges about what we think some of the key issues are about how to actually make sure that you work together. And one of the key things that we need to avoid, I think, is a situation where schools and colleges are working against each other in this, because we're all in this together. It's absolutely in our interest for schools and colleges to be working together to make sure that every young person, wherever they are in the country, has access to the highest quality guidance. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.